This is Dr. Stan back here at Leisure Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And, of course, I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for this next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Rodriguez Tremblay, who's a retired professor of economics, lives up in Montreal, and he's actually going around at the present time lecturing and talking about what's going on economically. And he's written a fascinating article, I came across it on the online journal, where he actually talked about what's going on today. And I think it's vitally important that you understand the significance of what's going on today. Of course, remember, I'm just a retired orthopedic surgeon and an amateur historian, but, I mean, here's a man, Professor Tremblay, who's studied economics for, you know, and taught economics for many, many years, and his explanation of what's going on and his concern about what's going on is something I want you to hear about. And he begins his article by pointing out that many years ago, a gentleman named, a British economist named Walter Bagot, and he lived from 1826 to 1877, said, in a crisis, discount, and discount heavily. In other words, there's a crisis, a banking crisis. Well, you've got to discount, you've got to get money out there to overcome the crisis. But then, of course, he quotes the former chairman of the Federal Reserve System, William McChesney Martin, who said, the job of the Federal Reserve is to take away the punch bowl just when the party gets interesting. Now, what's he referring to? Well, basically, if when you just start pouring money out into the population, well, everybody just, it's wonderful, a wonderful party, everybody's prosperous, but if you just keep turning money out irresponsibly, why, pretty soon, you destroy the value of money and the whole economic system comes tumbling down. And I think as we talk about this with Professor Tremblay, well, you'll get the background of how these two quotations apply to what's going on today. Professor, thank you so very much for being with us.
Yeah, good evening, Dr. Monty.
Well, thank you so very much. And so I'm going to just sort of let you pick up and tell the story of as you look and see what's happening today. And of course, the average individual really doesn't understand the Federal Reserve System, these concepts of central banks. All we know is that things have been pretty good for the last 15 or 20 years, a few ups and downs, but and even right now they're telling us that everything's really fine, that everything's under control. But is it really?
Well, there are financial problems. It doesn't mean that the real economy would be negatively affected. It does happen in the sometimes that a recession follows a financial crisis, but not always. In the case of the Federal Reserve System, the Fed board, they have two main responsibilities. The first one is to control inflation, to avoid inflation, the debasement of money, in other words. And the second, it's to keep the economy growing or prosperous. And this has been included in the 1913 Fed Constitution, in a way. That can be compared with what the European Central Bank has as its main function. In Europe, the Central Bank has only one function, which is to control inflation. But in the United States, the Fed has that double objective of controlling inflation but sustaining the economy at the same time.
Yes, but certainly are they controlling inflation? They tell us they're controlling inflation, but are they really being honest with us? That's the big question.
Well, inflation has not been very high in the last 5 or 6 years, where there was a recession in 2001.
Please hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, Professor, go right ahead.
Yes. In 2001, there was a recession. Of course, there was September 11 shock, and this slowed down the economy and slowed down any inflation pressures. But since 2001, the price of oil, for example, which used to be about $22, $24 gallon, now is more like today it was $82. So nearly four times what it used to be. The price of gold was about $275 an ounce. Now it's more than $750 an ounce. So there are now inflationary pressures. What contains that inflation partly is the fact that the economy now is more globalized, in the sense that a country like the United States imports a lot of goods from China or from India, from low-cost producing countries. And this has a tendency to lower prices and lower cost of production. So the environment can be disinflationary, in a sense, when there's so much international competition to keep prices down. But when a currency goes down, as the U.S. dollar is going down now, and when oil is being sold more and more in euros rather than in dollars, this tends to push dollar prices up, and that's why we see the price of oil now reaching the level of $82.
But, of course, hasn't the dollar lost almost 40% of its value in the last 3 or 4 years?
Oh, yes. There's been, 5 years ago, you know, the dollar was much stronger than the euro. It was worth about 80 cents. It took only 80 cents to buy 1 euro. And now it takes 142 $1.42 to buy 1 euro. So you see, it nearly was half by half in the last 5 or 6 years vis-à-vis the euro. So the dollar has been declining. And the decision that the Fed took on September 18 was to address the problem of a potential slowdown of the U.S. economy and let the dollar fall under the idea that a lower dollar will help the U.S. economy export.
Hold up for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Professor Tremblay was simply saying that the purpose of the Federal Reserve System was not only to prevent inflation, but to keep the economy going and growing and prosperous, in contrast to the central banks in Europe, and their job was to just prevent inflation, in other words, keep a stable currency. Although, when you have a fiat currency with nothing behind it, you know, it's sometimes very, very hard to keep it from losing value or from expanding the money supply and secondary inflation. And Professor was simply pointing out how gold back about 2000 was about $250 an ounce. Now it's almost tripled in price. Certainly oil has tripled in price over the last 7 years. Certainly we're seeing now a lot of our foods are beginning to go up, and the dollar has gone from being about, to buy a euro it used to take 80 cents, and now it costs $1.40. It went from 80 cents to $1.40 over the last 4 or 5 years, so the dollar seems to be losing value. Aren't these all indicative of the fact that we really are facing some rather dire financial circumstances?
Well, the drop of the dollar is a double-edged sword. Of course, it reflects the fact that the U.S. economy has been borrowing abroad a lot of money in the last 5 or 6 years and has raised the foreign debt. There's close to $4 trillion of debt that the U.S. economy has towards the rest of the world. And of course, that means interest payments have to be paid to foreign bond holders and all that. So when if it is borrowed in U.S. dollars, though, the foreigners are losing the money in a sense, because they are paid in dollars, which in their own currency is worth less. Although a lower dollar on the other side will help car manufacturers here and other manufacturers who compete with the foreigners to be able to sell abroad more easily, and their competitiveness will increase. So in the sense that may next year, for example, stimulate the U.S. economy by increasing the exports. At the same time, as the U.S. consumers will probably lower somewhat their expenditures, their expenses, because of the housing crisis, many consumers now will feel poorer with all the foreclosures. Something like 2.5 million foreclosures are expected in the next few months. And this will make consumption expenditures, consuming expenditures going down a little bit, or not be as frisk as it has been the last few years.
But of course, for the foreign central banks, which you're holding somewhere in the neighborhood of $2.5 trillion in American dollars, they hold American dollars and they're losing money every year. You point out that certainly that the dollar, at least in the past, has lost 5% a year. They're only getting 4%, so they're actually losing money every year they hold the dollars. How long do you think that foreign banks, central banks, will continue holding dollars when they lose money every single day?
Well, that's a preoccupation that the financial sector here, banks and brokerage houses, should have, because the U.S. dollar has been, since the World War II, you know, since 1945, the main key currency, key reserve currency around the world. The U.S. dollar has been king, and a lot of people have been holding U.S. dollars, beginning with central banks, but other corporations and individuals are holding U.S. dollars because it was very liquid and you could invest easily in the financial markets, in stocks and bonds and all that. And the price of oil was also set in dollars, but not a dollar, with the dollar plummeting. Of course, as you mentioned, foreign holders of dollars are losing money at the rate of about $50 billion a year, and they are trying to avoid these losses by switching to the euros or the yens. And even though the U.S. dollar now is still about two-thirds of the official reserves of all the other central banks, and the euro is 25%, but 10 or 15 years from now, it will be probably equal. The euro and the dollar will be the two main key currency in the world, I predict, about 10 or 15 years.
You think that it'll be 10 or 15 years before the dollar then ceases to be the only major reserve currency?
Well, it is not anymore the only reserve currency, because 25% of the reserves are held in euros and somewhat in the yen and some in gold also. But this will accelerate, I think, the next few years, as the U.S. dollar will probably remain low, and especially if there is not a recession maybe next year, but a slowdown, interest rates will remain low here, and therefore the U.S. dollar will not be able to rebound very much. It may rebound a little bit, but not very much. So that will keep the euro, and probably the yen will increase very fast also, because a lot of money has been borrowed in Japan in the last 3 or 4 years, because interest rates were very low there, and this money has been invested here in the U.S. and elsewhere, but that money is going back to Japan, and this will raise the value of the yen next 2 or 3 years. So many currencies are going to go up in the coming years, including the yuan, which is the Chinese currency, which is much overvalued now, allowing the Chinese exporters to profit from a very low currency.
Well, if the value of the yen goes up, certainly why products we import from Japan will be more expensive. in the value of the yuan, the Chinese yuan goes up, things we import from China will be more expensive. And it seems to me that the American, certainly the average American, is going to get caught in a squeeze with a falling dollar, rising other currencies, because this is going to mean that, unlike it has been in the past where we could buy foreign goods very cheaply, those foreign goods are going to go up, and the American purchasers' living standards are going to go down because he's not going to be able to buy as much as he has. Is that a possibility?
Yes, you're pretty right, because the price of cars, like Toyota cars or Hyundai cars, and the price of oil also will go up. So therefore, a lot of goods will go up in price, and unless income increase at the same rate, it means the real income and standard of living may decline in the next few years because of these of this inflation, imported inflation in a sense, due to a large extent to the decline of the dollar.
Well, of course, although you didn't cover this in your article, there's a Dr. Blinder, Alan Blinder, an economist at Princeton, who was quoted in the Wall Street Journal as recently saying that America has the potential, if we continue along our present course, to lose between 30 and 40 million jobs. Now, we don't have that. We only have about 14 million manufacturing jobs, but he's talking about all sorts of jobs leaving America, engineering jobs, architectural jobs, lawyer jobs, even many of the things that doctors do can be done easily and cheaply in India and gotten back here within a few minutes due to electronics and the ease of communication. Do you see that there may very well be a shift in the whole economics of both our country and your country? Because, of course, the United States and Canada are bound together not only by proximity but by common heritage.
Yeah, we have the same. We face the same problem of disindustrialization, in the sense that a lot of our manufacturing jobs are being shifted abroad. In the case of Canada, it's even more severe, in the sense that we produce a lot of oil and gas, and this creates a lot of income, but not many jobs, because our oil and gas industry is mainly located in Western Canada, while the industrial base is mainly on the eastern side of the country. Regarding Alan Blinder's comment, this is of course very true, that the fear of disindustrialization is present. And it's not only for manufacturing goods, but it can be, as you say, services, professional services that can be shifted abroad. Mind you, the drop of the U.S. dollar to a certain extent would address that by making it more expensive to buy these services and goods abroad, and may reverse the trend for at least a few years, at least in the case of the United States. For Canada, the Canadian dollar is bound to keep increasing, and we call that the Dutch disease, when a country has a very, very strong currency due to exports of energy products like oil and gas, but which makes the competitiveness of the industrial sector less lower this competitiveness, and this is such of a Dutch disease, creating unemployment in the manufacturing sector. So this is part of the global rearrangement of the economy and the financial wealth around the world that we notice nowadays.
But this is the thing that, of course, to many people in the United States is very disturbing, because we're seeing, of course, a redistribution of the wealth of the American people, almost as if somebody wanted to send our wealth elsewhere, and so many people losing their jobs at $35, $40 an hour and getting a new job working at $10 an hour. I mean, overall, an awful lot of Americans are not living as well as we used to. And of course, perhaps we might just be on the verge of dramatic changes in America. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Professor Tremblay as we explore this fascinating essay he's written. Well, one of the things that you talk about, of course, is this, what the Federal Reserve System did, Arthur, pardon me, Mr. Bernanke, certainly on the 16th of...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Just to have a profound effect on the economy, so they acted and just began to flood the economy with money as a means of rescuing it. But there is always this possibility that this thing could get out of hand, and it could begin to get rampant inflation. And rampant inflation is simply a means of stealing the life savings of the people. And the question is, can we really depend upon them always to do the right thing? certainly doubt throughout history every fiat money system has eventually failed as long as there was no gold behind it. And is it the price of gold going up, do you think, a reflection of the fact that there are some people who believe that we might very well lose the dollar?
Well, as you mentioned, the dollar is a fiat currency. It has no gold directly tied to the currency, even if the U.S. government has still a lot of gold at in Fort Knox, but this is not gold used to protect the dollar. Since August 15, 1971, under the Nixon administration, and George Shultz was the Treasury Secretary, that date marked the end of the gold exchange standard. Before that date, the U.S. Government and the central bank used to guarantee the value of the U.S. dollar in gold, at least vis-a-vis other central banks. It had been suspended for all the other holders in 1968, but in 1971, that's the August 15, 1971, that was the break. So the U.S. dollar is a fiat currency whose value is decided by supply and demand. And if a central bank, the Fed, prints too much of it, of course it goes down. And if there's not enough, the price goes up. If I may come back to what the Fed did on September 18, they recognized that there was a liquidity crisis, they call that a credit crunch, that many banks, especially the ones which have been exposed to the mortgage crisis, the subprime crisis, they had a liquidity crisis. And in a liquidity crisis, this is a normal role of a central bank to lend cash to banks which have landed long-term but are short-term in a bind. But as I mentioned in my article regarding the Bayjot rule, usually the bank lends as much money as the central bank lends as much money as the banks need, but at a higher interest rate in order not to reward them for their imprudence in letting themselves become illiquid. But in this case, not only the Fed wants to correct the liquidity crisis, but in a certain extent they want to correct the solvency crisis, because some banks, of course, will be making less money in the months to come, because they will have to write off some of their loans, some of their mortgage loans, and this will lower their profit. By lowering the cost of credit to them, the Fed is subsidizing them to a certain extent. And that's the more debatable aspect of their intervention. Of course, we understand that the Fed has a balance act to carry, but they may have overdone it by lowering the cost of credit so much for the banks, while the small borrowers, the mortgage borrower, are losing their houses, but the big banks may not suffer as much as they should financially because of their imprudence.
Well, of course, isn't this going to be done at the expense of the people who are holding dollars? The little guy who's got his life savings in a pension fund or in an annuity or in an insurance policy, and by devaluating the dollar, by expanding the amount of money out there, won't that impact on the little people? Whereas, of course, the banks, they'll be fine, but what's going to happen to the person who's got all of their holdings tied up in dollars?
That's what we're going to see in the coming months. You see, the banks, by creating these new mortgage-backed assets, or
they call them collateralized debt obligations.
Yeah, CDOs. What they did, you know, it's not very complicated. They took a bundle of mortgages and they sliced them in different credit rating, in a sense. The lower 5% was...
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm sorry.
Very good.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Professor Rodriguez Tremblay, and he's an economist. He's retired now, but he lectures and travels and has written extensively on the financial system as we see it. And he was just explaining what had happened. They had all these mortgages, and of course, what they were, many of them were actually subprime mortgages that had actually been given to people who never should have been allowed to buy a house because they didn't have the money or the income to do it, and yet they were encouraged to buy houses and offered such appealing interest rates, but they were adjustable rate mortgages. And suddenly, now they took all these mortgages and they put them together and they made bonds out of them and told everybody that they were AAA rated bonds. People were certainly going to pay. Oh, of course, they were AAA rated because so many of the people wouldn't be able to meet their obligations. And well, I'm going to let you go ahead and tell the story because Basically what we've done is set up financial institutions all throughout the world with all of these bonds which are non-performing.
Yeah, there are two classes of victims in that crisis. The first, as you mentioned, were the borrowers, mortgage borrowers who bought houses with very poor credit. You know, we had no interest, no question asked about incomes and capacity to pay back the interest and the loan. And a lot of people were preoccupied with that type of banking because that was not normal. They were shifting the risk to somebody else. That's why the mortgage brokers and the mortgage banks didn't pay too much attention on the capacity of the borrower to repay, because they were selling these debts to unprepared, unknowledgeable savers, small people who had savings. They put their savings in some of these high-paying commercial papers. As you mentioned, they were rated sometimes somewhat too highly. And these savers, and many of them are foreigners in Europe, German people and all that, and pension funds. I think we'll see in the coming months that pension funds will report much lower returns because of they will have to write off many of their investments in these collateralized debt obligations, these commercial papers based on mortgage, which some of them are very illiquid now and don't produce any income anymore. So we'll see that there are pension funds. Many pension funds, the company pension funds and school teachers' pension funds.
Please hold that for just a moment. We'll be back in just a moment here with our other station. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Professor Tremblay was simply saying that because of these collateralized debt obligations, which are simply the mortgages on all of these homes that were sold to people who never should have been allowed to buy them at ridiculously low interest rates or certainly nothing down, people who couldn't afford to buy these houses, and they should have realized that down the line they were going to default on these mortgages. And we're talking about millions of mortgages, and suddenly they're bundled into loans. They're sold to pension funds, they're sold to hedge funds, they're sold to financial institutions, and they're told, my goodness, these are just, you know, they're AAA rated, nothing to worry about. And they simply deceived all these people. And, of course, now suddenly people have got bonds, or they've got their pensions and pension funds that have bought these bonds, and they're going to lose their shirts on them because there's no money behind them. They're going to get 25 cents on the dollar, and you wipe out 75% of a pension fund. That really begins to hurt. So please pick up the story there, Professor.
Well, as you mentioned yourself, I failed the Fed for not having withdrawn the punch bowl soon enough. You know, that may be due to the fact that there was a change of chairmanship at the Fed, and Chairman Alan Greenspan was replaced by Chairman Bernanke in January 2006, and at that time, in 2005 and 2006, the Fed should have impose some reserves on the type of loans that the banks were doing in order to slow down that activity or some other regulations. But because of the change in the leadership of the Fed, nothing was done. And so to a certain extent, the Fed is partly responsible for the financial crisis that they are trying to cure now, but they were partly responsible for the creation of the crisis to begin with.
And of course, I don't know whether you saw that wonderful interview on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl and Alan Greenspan, when she asked him why they didn't try to stop the this whole subprime mortgage thing, because a lot of the people on the Fed were concerned and said, we've got to investigate it. This, I mean, it's fraudulent and it's going to result in chaos. And Alan Greenspan steadfastly refused to do it. And of course, it was, he kept trying to make all sorts of excuses. But of course, it was a wonderful interview because Leslie Stahl, the interviewer from CBS, had read the minutes of the Federal Reserve System when Alan Greenspan suggested they had no idea what was happening. She counted him.
Yes.
And if I ever saw a man lose his composure, it was Alan Greenspan, when suddenly he realized that it's what he was saying. Leslie Stahl knew he wasn't telling the truth. And then she even began to play some of the things about the minutes from going back to the year 2000. They recognized at that time, and Alan Greenspan steadfastly refused to do what was his obligation to do, and that was try to preserve the dollar.
Yes, well, he wrote that book, you know, The Age of Turbulence,
right,
which is his memoirs, and to a certain extent, this has taken some of the halo over his reputation. You know, Alan Greenspan had a very nice reputation before that book, but now, so many things have been learned directly from the book or from his interviews that people are questioning a lot of his decision and lack of decision. There are two things that can be raised here. The first is that the Fed is not a total government agency. You know, it's the Fed board is nominated by the president, but the 12 bank districts in the U.S., because the United States is divided in 12, there are 50 states in the United States, but there are 12 banking districts, and the border of these districts never coincide with a state. You know, it's in order not to politicize the Fed, and these banks are private banks, and they sit also on the enlarged Fed board, and they participate in the decision making to a certain extent. When the Fed lends to the banks, the banks themselves are lending to them, take the decision to lend money to themselves, since they participate in the decision making process. You see what I mean?
Right.
In Europe and in Canada, it's a bit different. In Canada, the central bank is more totally public agency, and the banks are, even if they are consulted, they are not as much involved in the decision-making process. This is one thing. The other thing is what we learned from former chairman Greenspan is that he was very close to the Bush administration, in the sense that I was even reading that today. I was at Stanford University this morning, and I was reading his book, and he said that he was going very often to the executive branch to visit the chairman of the economic advisor and visit the vice president and also visit the president. And just before the election, the presidential election of 2004, it will seem to me that being so close to the administration, he may have been influenced of not taking any steps to rein in the more extreme financial loans being made to unsolvable homeowners or home buyers because of this 2004 election. So that may explain the fact that may be another explanation, plus the fact that the two chairmen changed in 2005, 2006, why the Fed didn't do very much to stop the erosion of the financial viability of the mortgage industry.
But of course, what we're talking about is the potential destruction of the value of the American dollar. Now, that sounds, you know, pretty radical, but certainly there's no instance in all history where a fiat money system has worked for any period of time, whether it be ancient Egypt, pardon me, ancient Greece or ancient Rome. I mean, they tried all sorts of things in Rome, and we've seen this in Venice and Florence, and we saw it in the Weimar Republic, and we saw it in Russia in the early 1900s, and we saw it in Argentina a few years ago. I mean, when you have irresponsible people with a fiat money system, isn't there always the threat that as things get worse and worse, they just start printing more and more money? And that, certainly they've even stopped printing the M3, so we can't really know what they're really doing now. It's almost as if they're trying to cover up what they're doing with the monetary system here.
Well, Dr. Monte, you raise a few interesting questions.
And we've only got about 15 minutes more. But
well, the question
please.
Of hyperinflation, of course, is always the biggest threat that any society can have, because it destroys and confiscates everybody's wealth, at least financial wealth, or even real wealth, because sometimes you have real wealth, but taxes are increasing so fast that you lose your property. You mentioned the Weimar Republic, of course, in 1921, 22, 23 in Germany. That was due to the war, of course, and wars are very dangerous because they are dangerous in the sense that governments get very in debt. They create huge deficits, and when the government has a huge debt, mind you, in 2001 the U.S. government public debit was $3 billion, and now it's $9 billion, and the ceiling has been increased to $9.8 billion, $9.8 trillion, I'm sorry. You have to put three more zeros. And
billion, trillion after a while, why? Because, I mean, I can't even imagine that amount of money, but go ahead.
That's right. Now, but now we can say roughly that the debt ceiling of the U.S. government now is $10 trillion.
Right.
Well, the U.S. economy total for 1 year is about $13.5 trillion. So you see, the total debt of only the U.S. government is close to the total production of 1 year. So when you have that type of debt, there's always a danger to monetize that debt, to use the central bank to monetize that debt. And not in the article that you have in front of you, but in a previous article, I gave the example of after the French Revolution, the French government, under the advice of a British economist called whose name was John Law, decided to print money with the backing of the churches and the lands that the church had confiscated. And this created the assignat in hyperinflation, a very high inflation. I don't say at all that this is going to happen in the next 4 or 5 years in the U.S. But since the Fed now has accepted to lend money to the banks using backing some of the mortgage assets that they had.
Some of these collateralized debt obligations really aren't that much good.
That's right. And in that sense, it's a way to use illiquid assets to create money, which is very liquid, of course. There's always a danger of creating too much liquidity and justifying this creation by saying, well, we have the backing of the real assets behind, but the real assets are very illiquid. And therefore, the new money will create demand for the goods, and this creates inflation. So we're going to watch in the next few years, is inflation, especially imported inflation, doesn't pick up very much. If it does, that could be a sign, an harbinger of things to come. This will be dangerous for pension funds and for financial security of retirees, because most retirees, of course, cannot recoup losses if their financial investments are reduced. through inflation or bankruptcies, or we could see some bankruptcies at the beginning of 2008, because the resetting of rates on mortgages is going to be more numerous. There will be more of them at the beginning of until Easter in 2008 than we had this summer. So we have calm now. I think we are in the middle of the eye of the storm. I think there will be some upheaval at the beginning of the year.
Well, I share your concern, and I think we really, what we need, of course, is somebody who's willing to take away the punch bowl, but nobody wants to take away the punch bowl when the party's so good.
Well, the bonds market is reading the situation now with some apprehension, because the Fed has lowered the short-term rates. Of course, it controls the short-term rates. But the long-term rates have not declined at all. They have inch up a little bit. They are going up. And mortgage rates are going up also. So that makes me believe that we're going to have a slowdown in the first two quarters of 2008. But that may not turn out into a recession. I'm sorry. The true recession that I expect is the 10-year cycle. We had a recession in 1991, for example. We had one in 2001, and I expect one in 2010 and 2011, where that will be the trough also of the housing market crisis. And so the big recession, the 10-year recession, would be more worrisome than the slowdown that we're going to have at the beginning of 2008.
Well, I think it's certainly, I hope that you're right. I hope that nothing terrible is going to happen until, of course, until for another 3 or 4 years from now. Well, certainly, as you point out, that there is a threat to the entire economic stability, you know, if this thing really tends to get out of hand. And then, of course, the question is, how long will foreign banks be willing to continue lending money to the United States when they're losing money on every dollar they lend to us?
Yeah, and these are very important questions that you raise. My answer is that they will shift away. Of course, naturally, when you lose money, you try to avoid losing money. As I say, you stop digging. Another point that I may raise just before we leave, it's a question of truth in reporting financial situation. Of course, we had problems a few years ago about private corporations not reporting the true situation, reporting their true financial situation. I see a bit the same thing with governments. For example, when the U.S. government reports the deficit, well, it used to have a few surpluses in the 1990s, but now it's mainly a deficit. They include in the revenues the excess that Social Security, excess income of Social Security compared to the outlays in the government revenues. This should be a separate account. I mean, Social Security should not be counted as normal government revenues like taxes, but it is counted as a taxing revenue, and that makes the deficit less large than it is truly large. For example, for this year, the federal deficit was announced at $163 billion, but that includes the excess of Social Security inflows, and I don't have the precise figures in front of me, but if we had a distinction between the normal government expenditures and income compared to Social Security, then the pictures of the government would be less rosy. It would be even worse, I think. So for people to really understand what's going on, you need to have the facts, to have the true figures of what's happening.
Well, as somebody once said, that figures don't lie, but liars can certainly figure.
That's a danger with the statistics. And coming back to the inflation, about 4 or 5 years ago, the definition of inflation was changed. Because under the pressure from the government, because some of the government outlays are indexed to the inflation, the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. And there was a change in the way that the index was calculated, in the sense that if the price of apples goes up faster than the price of bananas, then we lower the weight of the apples in the index and increase the weight of the bananas in the index, because their prices have increased less quickly. And this has the effect to lower the true inflation. But for example, if the price of pizza goes up and you like very much pizza and you keep buying pizza even when the price goes up, then of course your inflation is higher than the average rate of inflation. So for most people now, especially here in California, I think prices are very high. The rate of inflation here in California is much higher than in elsewhere in the United States, because many of the staples that people buy, starting with housing.
Hold that thought right there for a moment, please. All right, Professor, go right ahead.
Talking about the inflation. When we take an average inflation for an entire country, does it mean that for each individual this is the right inflation rate? In a sense, there is an inflation rate for each individual, in a sense, depending on what you buy, what you need to live. And here in California, for example, the cost of housing is so expensive, so high, and for $600,000 you get the one bathroom, two bedroom house.
I know, it is so ridiculous. You know, when I see the prices, even the price of my own home, I couldn't afford to buy this home if I had to.
Are a very successful surgeon.
Well, I was at the present time. I'm retired, but of course, even for a successful surgeon, with the prices such as they are, it makes it extremely difficult to purchase things. But what you're basically saying is they've been playing games with the CPI, because it was indexed to Social Security, and had they really put in the true CPI, why, they would have had to give Social Security a much higher rate, so they didn't want to be paying that off. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, and the same with the true deficit also. By trying to merge the Social Security fund with the overall government fund, that murky the water, and you don't really see the same thing. And there are other entitlements programs which will have big deficits in the future, Medicare, Medicaid, and all these big entitlement programs. And this should be separated, in the sense that people should get a report on each program and judge them and see how they're going to be financed in the next 10, 20, 30 years. Most people feel, though, that the money won't be there. I think young people think that Social Security is a thing of the past, that it was a promise made, but it won't be a promise taken. It's partly because there's not enough information and not enough concrete steps to fund these programs.
No, because Mr. Walker, David Walker, the GAO of the, I think he's the Executive Secretary General of the GAO or something of the sort, and because he's using a figure of somewhere to $50 to $60 billion, which is the real deficit. And next year, why, of course, the baby boomers begin to retire at age 62, and a couple of years after that, they'll be eligible for Medicare, and there's just no money in the fund. There's no fund.
78 million Americans baby boomers are going to take their retirements in the next 10 years.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stad. Our guest has been Professor Rodriguez Tremblay, and we could go on for hours. We're just having a great time, but we're out of time. I thank you so very much for being willing to spend an hour with us, and hope perhaps we could get you onto some of our other programs, because it is so vitally important the American people understand the economics and where we are.
Yes, and I have a site on the internet site that people sometimes may go and read the last two articles that I mentioned regarding the financial panics. It's called the www.thenewamericanempire.com.
TheNewAmericanEmpire.com.
And it's very easy to reach. And, of course, I give my opinions on a lot of topics, and some people do not need to agree with everything I write, but I provide some information, some figures on topics like financial imbalances and crisis and recessions and cycles, economic cycles. I refer to economic cycles reaching trough in 2010 and 11, and that's why people have to be prepared for these troughs.
Well, thank you so very much, and that's
www.newamericanempire.com. TheNewAmericanEmpire.com.
God bless. Thanks very much.
And congratulations for your show, Doctor.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Nice talk to you.
And, of course, that was Professor Rodriguez Tremblay. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you'd really like to, of course, have a grasp of what's going on, let me suggest the pamphlet we've written. It's based on three or four of our newsletters. It's called The History of Money, What You Should Know. And then, of course, we have my talk on the financial tsunami with the syllabus that goes with that. And then you, of course, want to get my last three newsletters and one more that we'll be writing. Actually, two of them are up on the Internet, the Financial Collapse 1, the Financial Collapse 2. And that's at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Now, for the definitive work on this subject, written by my good friend Ed Griffin, who I've known for, 45 years. It's in the Creature from Jekyll Island. We recommend strongly another book called The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton. And lastly, the book Fiat Money Inflation in France, which tells you what happened in France in 1789 after the French Revolution. So that's The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and it is a conspiracy. And then, of course, the fiat money inflation in France, the little pamphlet, The History of Money, and my talk on the financial tsunami. But the syllabus is, I think, very important because it'll give you the references and you'll begin to understand the carry trade. You'll understand derivatives. You'll find out how this housing crisis fits into the whole system. And then, of course, what is really going on, because we have a number of crises, and they're all coming together at one time, certainly with the price of oil at $82 a barrel. It could very well go to $100 to $150 a barrel. And what do you think that would begin to do to our economy? We have shortages in food production. We have the lowest levels of food storage since we've had, going back to about 1971. We're having failures of many of our major crops. And, of course, the corn we're just using to make the ethanol, and that's driving up the price of corn. And then everything that, of course, comes from corn. So we feed it to chickens, they feed it to beef, and they feed it to all sorts of livestock. And so all of those prices are going up. The prices of eggs are going up. All secondary, of course, to government interfering with the normal cycle of things. But I believe we're on the verge of a major inflationary spiral. Well, anyway, we do hope that many of you out there will remember that we're having an all-day conference, and it's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. That's the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. And October 28th, we hope you can come. We're bringing in outside speakers. And if you are interested, remember we're going to have lunch, so you'll have to have a reservation. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Incidentally, Ron Brown's going to be there, one of our regular commentators on financial matters, and we'll have time for questions, and you'll have a chance to talk to Ron. I think he does a very good job for his customers. Well, anyway, this is Dr. Stan saying, please pray for America and pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Hail, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for this hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Dr. David Kennedy, who's a retired dentist and sitting on the front lines of the battle to try to stop the poisoning of the American people. Now, when we talk about poisoning the American people, that's so difficult for most people to imagine it could really be going on. Why, nobody would want to poison the American people. There'd be outcries by Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Brian Williams, and they'd all be talking about it. And, of course, they're not going to talk about it. They're the finest conservatives money could buy. And the one thing is they could not let you know that they're fluoridating the water all across this country. They're a massive program here in California. They're giving millions of dollars to small communities and to large communities, massive amounts of money, so that they will go ahead and fluoridate the water. But they're not fluoridating the water. They're putting in something called hydrofluosilicic acid, which is so toxic you can't dump it in the river, you can't dump it in the ground, you can't even dump it in the ocean. It's a poisonous substance that has a profound impact on the human body, and it contains cadmium and polonium and lead, and as well as a certain amount of fluoride. So why are they putting it into the water? Well, you'd have to ask people who are doing it. Well, I think there's a lot of money to be made, but I also think there are people who have a different attitude because they know the water fluoridation decreases fertility and increases cancer. It has an effect on the mind, and it changes and alters the ability of the mind to function. But with us this afternoon this evening is Dr. David Kennedy, and he's far more of an expert on that than I am. In fact, he was over in China, and he has a wonderful DVD we carry that shows the children in the Chinese classrooms where they've taken the fluoride out of the water. Where they used to have it, they got it out. The kids are bright-eyed, and they're just nice kids. And then you look at the kids in the communities where they have the fluoride in the water. All the difference in the world and the attitude of the kids. David, thank you so very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, thanks for sharing this with your listeners.
Okay, you pick up the story, and I'm going to be quiet here because certainly you've seen the difference between the children who have the fluoridated water. No, that's not hydrofluosilicic acid. That's the normal fluoride in the water in China that the Chinese are trying to get out because they know the profound effect it has on the mind. And here they're trying to get it into the water because they know the profound effect it has in dulling the mind.
That's natural fluoride, and it does dull the mind. But the stuff they're putting in the water, in 91% of the fluoridated water supplies in the United States, is, as you said, hydrofluosilicic acid, which is raw, untreated, hazardous waste from the pollution scrubber systems of the phosphate fertilizer mining industry in Florida. And so the problem is this stuff is much more toxic than the natural fluoride. Natural fluoride is not good. That's why I shot that documentary in China at the request of the people at the medical school there. It was basically to show the American public that natural fluoride is not that good. That's the myth. You know, they came up with the story that, oh, someplace in Texas didn't have as many cavities. Well, if you go to the dentist that was in that town, he said they had just as many cavities as they did anywhere else. If you read the New York Times the day before yesterday, it says tooth decay is on the rise in America.
So, gee, why would it be when so many of our communities have fluoridated water?
The fluoride causes tooth decay. It's destroying the health of the children. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
But it's not just the health of the children. It's not just the children who are drinking it. It's the adults. And, of course, it's destroying the health of our people. And that is what they do not want the American people to know. And that, of course, is why the material that Dr. Kennedy has put together is so vitally important. And we do carry, of course, several of the DVDs he's put together as he's traveled around the world interviewing people, experts in the field, in countries after country. And you realize, of course, every other country is trying to get the fluoride out of the water. Here they're trying to poison our people. Well, David, pick the story up.
Well, you know, everybody on the planet now agrees that infants should not drink fluoridated water. Well, let's just stop for a second. Are there other people? Well, sure, that would be people with cardiovascular disease or diabetes or people with kidney problems. Actually, I wouldn't drink the stuff if you paid me. So I think everybody on the planet shouldn't drink it. But even the advocates for this intrusion into our life with hazardous waste agree that the baby shouldn't drink it. Why? Because breast milk has no fluoride in it. And if a baby nurses a mother, it very seldom gets dental fluorosis. If a baby is fed a bottle made up of tap water, it very often gets dental fluorosis.
Well, because it's dental fluorosis.
Dental fluorosis are funny-looking spots on the children's teeth, which also means they have funny-looking spots on their brain and in their bones and in their thyroid. It's the first outward visible sign that you've poisoned the baby.
And I think that's what's the important thing, is it's not so much the brown spots on the teeth, but when you have brown spots on the teeth, why, it's affecting the brain and the bones and every aspect of the body. It is a poison, and when you have a dental fluorosis, you also have poisoning of the general body as well. But nobody's going to tell you that, and why would you want everybody to have to drink, you know, fluoridated water when fluoridated water does not affect the dental cavities? At the best, it acts locally, you know, even the American Dental Association will admit that ingestion of fluoridated water doesn't stop cavities. It's the local or topical application of the fluoride that works. Is that correct, David?
I think that's the lie they've retreated to. They used to say you had to swallow it to get it in the enamel. Research has proven that's false. So now they're saying, oh, you need to brush your teeth with it. Well, you know, you can brush your teeth with salt, and that'll reduce tooth decay. There was a study on babies where they dabbed their teeth with a little bit of pulvinated iodine, and that reduced cavities tremendously. None of the fluoride had any measurable impact. So I think that if you catch them in a lie, they'll make up another one, and then you got to catch them in that one, they'll make up another one. I don't think fluoride has any benefit to mankind in any way. The only thing it does is benefits the companies that generate it as part of their hazardous effluent, because cities are actually buying this stuff from them to put in the water for the babies or whatever. The trouble with dental fluorosis is it poisons the child when the teeth are forming, but you don't see it until those teeth come in. So you know how you get one set of teeth and then they fall out and you get another set of teeth? Well, you don't see the dental fluorosis till the kid are 6 or 7 years old. And a lot of people have trouble figuring out where the kid was when he was 1 and 2. But that's where he got poisoned. When the teeth looked funny when he's 6 and 7, he was poisoned when he was 1 and 2. So that's the trouble with fluoride. You've got to draw the line for people and say, look, these funny-looking spots on the teeth were caused by what? The water he was drinking when he was 2 years old.
One of the incredible things is, Chris, that there are still pediatricians out there who are giving mothers, you know, fluoride tablets to give to their children. There's still obstetricians who are giving the pregnant women fluoride, you know, so the baby's teeth would be good. And yet, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics has recommended they do away with the fluoride for infants. But there's so many of the pediatricians have no idea. They've always given the fluoride tablets. They're giving them and poisoning the children. Not that they intentionally are doing it. It is simply the fact that they don't understand how toxic fluoride is.
Well, they've been lied to over and over again. They used to think it was a good idea to give a pregnant woman. Of course, it made it more likely for her to have a Down syndrome baby. So, you know, who wants to break her chromosomes, too? But there is no evidence whatsoever that giving a woman fluoride is going to do anything except poison the woman, and that's a crime, in my opinion. Matter of fact, if you'll open up the physician's desk reference, which is the book is put together by the drug companies, it doesn't even recommend that you give it to the a pregnant woman. So doctors that are doing that, they need to be in court explaining to the jury of 12 people why they didn't bother to keep up, because that hasn't been a recommendation for the last 30 years. And you're not wrong that there are a good many people out there. As a matter of fact, I talked to a dentist the other day who wrote the prescription for his own wife. I was in Nebraska at a meeting, and I said, you know, they were going, rah, 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 fluoride's really good. Our kids don't have any cavities. And I asked them, any of them got any neurological problems? And you know, the wife turned white and sat down, and he came up to me afterwards, and he said, well, what do you mean about neurological problems? I said, you know, like brain damage. And he said, well, how about Down syndrome? And I said, oh, well, that's not a neurological problem. That's a broken chromosome. That causes that, too. And he said, oh, my God, that was my first daughter. My wife took tablets when she was pregnant. Okay, fine. And what was? How old was his wife then? 22 years old. Does Down syndrome ever occur in a 22-year-old woman? Yes, if she's drinking fluoridated water or exposed to fluoride. So, you know, it's insane to give the reproductive health of our nation over to hazardous waste disposal. And that's basically what we're doing. When we allow people to dispose of their waste with arsenic, lead, cadmium, and hydrofluorosilicic acid in our public drinking water, it poisons everything it comes in contact with. If you get cereal from Battle Creek, Michigan, it's going to be high in fluoride because Battle Creek is fluoridated, and any food that they process in fluoridated water is going to be high in fluoride. So you can't avoid it. If you went to the grocery store, I sent a TV station and said, well, Dr. Kennedy, you claim that there's fluoride in everything. And I said, well, I've tested quite a few things. Well, test some for us. And I said, no, they'll just say I cheated. You go to the grocery store, you buy 10 things off the shelf and have them tested, and you tell me which ones don't have fluoride in it. And so they said, well, okay. And they went to the grocery store, and they bought Gerber's Graduate Peri Punch, and it was 3 parts per million, enough to cause brown spots on every child that drinks it. They tested toothpaste. They tested Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola was right at 1 part per million. They picked up, I think, Minute Maid orange juice, which was also 1 part per million, made in a fluoridated community. So they said, we can't seem to find anything on the shelves that doesn't have fluoride in it. I said, well, you either have to buy the distilled water or the pediatric electrolytes. So they were shocked, but, you know, it's true. And then the new program that the august body up in Washington, D.C. has decided is to allow the importers of food to fumigate it with what's called Vicane or sulfural fluoride. We use it here in California to kill termites because it'll penetrate every nook and cranny in your house, crawl up in those walls and kill those little termites that were chewing on the wood. Well, you don't think it's going to crawl inside the almonds that are imported or the nuts or the berries or the powdered eggs? They fumigate powdered eggs. The eggs end up at 600 parts per million. If you ate those eggs, that would make you throw up. Well, everybody says, oh, I don't eat powdered eggs. The heck you don't. Do you eat bread? Do you eat in these muffins and stuff like that you pick up for your breakfast cereal? Yeah, they throw these powdered eggs in all of the prepared foods. And, they're going to end up with huge amounts of pesticide in them because they're fumigating all the foods. It can come in with a label that says organic on it. Isn't that nice? I'll get that more expensive when organic. But when it came into this country, the fool dosed it with pesticides so you can't get organic food imported from another country. And isn't that incredible?
I think what it's important for people to understand that, and you correct me if I'm wrong on this, David, but the toothpaste is about 1,000 parts per million. And of course, they say on the toothpaste tube, if you eat any of that, then why immediately to go to a poison control center? But when they're fumigating the wheat and other products, they actually, according to Dr. Paul Conant, it leaves a residual of up to as much as 800 parts per million in the wheat. So then when you eat that, you're getting 800 parts per million. Now, if you were to take a little dab of toothpaste at 1,000 parts per million, why, of course, you would go to the poison control center. But what happens when you're getting 800 parts per million? With a large amount of 800 parts per million. And nobody's telling the American people that they're poisoning so many of our products.
And go buy a bottle of water, and it doesn't even tell you how much fluoride there is in there. You're absolutely correct. And, brush your teeth with wheat. That's a good idea. It's incredible the careless attitude they have toward yours and my longevity. But I say don't let the same people be in charge of Social Security that are in charge of your longevity, because there's a conflict of interest there.
Well, what you're really saying is, of course, that certainly next year the baby boomers begin to retire, and, of course, there is no Social Security retirement fund. It's all been spent. It's part of the national debt. So they're going to have to simply kill off a lot of the people. And people say nobody would do that. I mean, nobody would be that crass or indifferent. Nobody would want to kill the elderly in America. But I would say, why not? There are people who have a different worldview. They really do. And when you, as I have, you've debated them and looked in their eyes and they say, as one woman said to me, we look at the world differently, doctor. We have a different worldview. And I looked in those eyes and they were really scary because she was basically evil. If I ever saw evil eyes, she had them. And there really are people who don't care about human life. They know exactly what Dr. Kennedy is saying. They're poisoning our children. They're poisoning the adults. We're getting more and more fluoride and everything, and it's a deadly poison. I mean, what do you think they use to kill the termites? What do you think they use to kill rats?
Sulfuryl fluoride or sodium fluoride. Right. They'll kill them. In San Diego back in 2000 when the then mayor, I think it was, oh, it was 1997, I think the then mayor was Mayor Goldacre. She said, I'm going to vote for accepting this gift of funds in order to put fluoride in the water supply for the children. It won't really affect me because I have reverse osmosis. Well, you know, bad news is when you take a shower, Mayor, you're going to be getting a lot of fluoride through your skin. And if you want to go get a glass of Starbucks, you're going to get fluoride in your Starbucks. If you get a bowl of soup, you're going to have fluoride in your soup. And the only thing that was good is that we managed to stop them from doing that. But now they've talked the Metropolitan Water District in in Los Angeles into putting tons of fluoride in all the water they sell us down here in San Diego. And that the Metropolitan Water District has absolutely refused to warn parents that their children should not be drinking the water with the fluoride in it, because they will be overdosed, especially if it's an infant. It actually says that on the American Dental Association website. And why did they say that? It's because the National Academies of Science actually did an unbiased review of the effects of fluoride on the health of human beings, and they determined that levels that were 100 times lower than the level that they want to put in the water would cause thyroid suppression in an iodine malnourished child. And, you know, do we have any malnourished children here? Why, I think so. So that means those children are the ones that get blasted. And to me, that's disproportionate harm. If you put something in the water that your little fat kid that's, you know, drinking big globs of milk every day isn't harmed by, and all the kids that are impoverished that really can't afford expensive milk get ruined by, I don't mean just kind of a little bit, I mean that's what's causing the dental fluorosis and the delayed eruption, the crooked teeth, that's thyroid suppression, that's what's going on. The pineal gland gets blasted, so they have early onset of puberty. That's why the little girls get pregnant at 10, 11 years old, is because the pineal gland is poisoned. We saw that in China. That's God's mechanism. This person's going to die by the time they're 40, so they're going to have a child by the time they're 10, so when they're 20, that the kids can help take care of them in their old age, because they do look old when they're 30. They're bent over, and where does fluoride accumulate? It accumulates in the lower lumbar spine, and it hurts. How many people on this country now are taking aspirin or Celebrex or one of the other non-steroid anti-inflammatories to try to make their lower back quit hurting? Well, that's where fluoride is. My sister-in-law never believes me, but finally I managed to talk them into, you know, just humor me, you know, get some bottled water, quit making up your morning coffee with the tap water. And she said, you know, for the first time in about 20 years, my lower back has quit hurting. I said, well, duh. I wonder why.
Well, now, of course, how much are they giving San Diego? My understanding is they're going to give a tremendous amount of money to get them to fluoridate and poison the people.
Well, they're not giving in. So this is part of the fake thing. We have in California, I think, 218 says they can't charge you unless they tell you what it's for, and that they specifically spell out water treatment is for the purpose of making the water disinfect the water or storage or transportation. Well, they sent out a phony 218 said that the Metropolitan Water District is raising the fees for water treatment. Well, water fluoridation is not water treatment, so they're lying to us from the get-go. It's not water treatment. It is treatment of the recipient of the water. If you go to the laws, they're under the health and safety, not under water. And so, you know, they're lying from the get-go. They're breaking a lot of laws, and we're going to have to sue them. It's going to cost a lot of money, and, you know, people want to help. They can put their shoulder to the wheel, and we will make these people stand up in court and tell big lies and they'll be caught at it.
Would you actually bring a lawsuit, David?
Yes.
Because that, of course, we'll do everything we can to get people to help you, because this is the only way we're going to get the truth out. The media is covering up. The government knows what's going on. The EPA, the scientists, the Environmental Protection Agency, they have put out information saying you're poisoning the people. And if you doubt that, you go to their website, www.nteu280.org. www.nteu280.org. Or read the articles, read the section there put up by the scientists who work for the Environmental Protection Agency. They're concerned because they're poisoning our children. Well, David, go right ahead.
And the scientists at the EPA have also sworn an oath to uphold the laws of this nation.
And it's unfortunate that we've got a lot of people at the upper echelons of the EPA who have a different agenda. And that's why they told that the firemen who were working on the wreckage of the Twin Towers there in New York, oh, go ahead, you don't have to worry, the air's fine, knowing full well it was going to destroy the lives and kill some of them. There are people who have a different worldview, because after all, there really are too many people in the world, aren't there? And why is it that no other country in the world is adding water routinely to their fluoride routinely to the water? Certainly not in Europe, not in India, not in China. Why are we the only country that's smart enough to water fluoridate our water? And I would like to suggest because there's a sinister agenda. And, of course, there are a lot of people out there who don't want to admit that they've been lying to us, but there's others who know exactly what they're doing. Well, David, pick up this story.
Well, the interesting thing is that the only countries that routinely add fluoride to the water are English-speaking countries, and I think that's because the liars don't speak foreign language very well, and that other countries, especially small democracies, are quick to see through the big phony, bony lie.
Are they still fluoridating Ireland?
Southern Ireland, not Northern Ireland. They're back trying to fluoridate Northern Ireland. They had 26 out of 27 counties rejected it wholeheartedly about 10 years ago, and now they're back again trying to fluoridate Northern Ireland. And the Irish have some of the worst teeth on the planet, but you can tell why if you go there, because every hotel, motel, restaurant you go into, there's a big bowl of candy. I mean, duh! You know, it's real obvious what causes tooth decay. If you know, the old work of Weston Price, he went around the world, found no decay where there wasn't white flour and white sugar, found terrible decay wherever there was white flour and white sugar. But nobody says anything bad about white flour and white sugar. Oh, no, that's wonderful stuff because, you know, it's sold by all the big corporations. But it sure rotted the kids' teeth in Africa and Borneo and San Diego. So anyway, it's a tragedy. But, you know, they got tons of the stuff to get rid of. Interesting thing about Ireland actually imports their fluoride from Europe, where it's against the law to put hydrofluorosilicic acid in the water, and so they import it, export it over to Ireland, so they've got to get rid of it somehow. Russia used to dispose of its hydrofluorosilicic acid in all the countries behind the Iron Curtain, you know, Poland, East Germany, and Hungary up and down the Iron Curtain there, and then when the Iron Curtain fell, they immediately stopped putting the stuff in the water. And then now we've got all these studies showing that when you stop putting fluoride in the water, the kid's tooth decay goes down.
Well, my goodness, if that's true, why don't we ever hear about that in the United States? If you take the hydrofluorosilicic acid out of the water, the tooth decay decreases.
We should stop putting the stuff in immediately. And, you know, what would it cost? It's a fake dental care program. If there's an article in the New York Times that the average dentist in the United States is making $185,000 a year, and they're working fewer hours. They're working about 25, 30 hours a week. And so they're raking in the money hand over fist. Well, what are all these people doing? Is if you look and open up the yellow pages, you can see what they're doing. They're doing cosmetic dentistry. Because fluoride makes teeth porous, brittle, and break. And so the teeth are cracking off, so they got to do crowns. It makes them suck up stain like a sponge. So, you know, when you have a little coffee or something like that, you gotta go to the bleachodontist and have it bleached back out. Otherwise, you go around with brown spots on your teeth for the rest of your life. And they're putting little plastic fingernails on your teeth so that you can have a nice looking smile because your teeth are all crooked.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with David. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. David Kennedy, who's a dentist himself, who certainly is on the front lines of the battle, trying to tell people what's going on. Now, the trouble is that the dentists, most of them, have been taught in medical school that fluoride is good. And, of course, if you are a dentist and you try to tell the truth, they will come after you and make your life miserable. Certainly Dr. Harvey Weinbach, a professor up at the University of Toronto, was pushing a water fluoridation for years until he suddenly realized that they weren't putting fluoride in the water. They were putting in hydrofluorosilicic acid that has cadmium and lead and polonium in it. And so when he started to speak out against fluoridation, he was threatened. He was threatened, and I invited him to come onto our programs, and he said, I cannot come onto your programs. I have been threatened. but you can see my material. And of course, some of this, some of the interviews with Harvey Lambach are Dr. David Kennedy's videos, you'll get at Radio Liberty if you want to get them. But if you really try to tell the truth, they're going to come after you. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. And if you just believe it's all financial, fine, that's fine. But there's so much money that's being put out. And the lobbyists here in California, where they got the latest legislation through, lobbyists all across the country, you know, to try to mandate putting this poison into our water. And believe me, if you we've talked to Dr. Roger Masters at Dartmouth. If you have certainly hydrofluorosilicic acid in your water, and you check the blood level of lead in the children, it doubles in white children, goes up four times in Hispanic children, and six times in black children. I mean, if there's ever anything, Christian, then there's no blood safe level of lead. It leads you to spits of rage and irresponsible activity and mental defectiveness, and we're simply poisoning the blacks. And where is the outcry? Where is Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton when we need somebody to speak out in defense of the blacks who are being intensely poisoned with the hydrofluorosilicic acid? The lead level is six times, and we have the material from Roger Masters, and we have a wonderful recent interview with him. Go right ahead, David.
And that's absolutely true, and that's called disproportionate harm, or I call it a racist policy, is when the government puts a chemical in the water that really poisons one group and just kind of poisons the other. But they knew that was happening clear back in 1950, and the guy knew it was Harold Hodge. And Harold, there's a secret memo. He knew it poisoned people clear back in the World War II, because that's where they were using the stuff. And he wrote a memo. They went down to deep water New Jersey, where the plant was, where they were making the bomb, and the people there had big red lesions on their face where the fluoride hit them in the face, and any exposed skin was red and bleeding. The shoes fell off, and their glasses, that back when glasses were made out of glass, became opaque because of the amount of fluoride floating around in the air there. And he said, this place is so toxic, only people of color should work here. So it's not a big surprise that when they fluoridated Grand Rapids, and they didn't fluoridate Muskegon, they went into Grand Rapids after 5 years, and that the African Americans had lots of dental fluorosis. They had twice as much dental fluorosis as the Caucasian kids. And they said, well, that's really no problem. we'll fluoridate Muskegon, too. And that now, 50 years later, they did the same experiment in Newburgh, New York, and Kingston, New York. And when they tried to fluoridate Kingston in 1955, the citizens of Kingston said, no, thank you. We don't care to have any of that in our water. And now they've got a 60-year experiment that shows that there's no difference in tooth decay between Newburgh and Kingston. And there is a huge difference in the amount of dental fluorosis, especially in the African-American children. Why is that important? Because when you poison a child so bad that their teeth come out funny-looking spotted, you've also poisoned their brain. And so you talk about how hard it is to teach children to read, all the learning disorders, all the special training, all the difficulty we have in the behavior. And that's what the Masters is talking about. High blood levels of lead lower serotonin. Serotonin is your feel-good, normal brain hormone. But if you're high on lead, you don't have it. So you don't feel good ever. And you feel angry, and you feel upset. And if anything happens to you, you go off like a firecracker. And that's why there's six times more African-Americans in prisons today than there are the Caucasians, and there's almost four times more Hispanic. Well, that's exactly the ratio of lead in the bloodstream. And that's what Roger Masters is telling you. Behavior is a symptom of a poisoned society.
And, of course, people find this so difficult to believe. Why, that couldn't be going on. If it were going on, everybody would know. And the trouble is, nobody knows because of the degree of control that exists through the media over what the American people read and what they see and what they hear, and then ultimately what they believe. Well, our guest this evening, Dr. David Kennedy, when we get back, we're going to open our lines. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. You've got to help us get this information out. Dr. Kennedy has done a wonderful job getting information. We carry his information, his DVDs, but you've got to help us convince the public that they're poisoning our children. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is, of course, Dr. David Kennedy. And David, now, do you have any new DVDs? You talked about a new DVD about the poisoning the children or something, but I couldn't find that on YouTube.
Well, you have to spell it just right. I'm trying to put in all the other. It's poisoned, past tense, poisoned babies, and that's a little snippet of my latest effort. It's the Metropolitan Water District in Los Angeles, where myself, Dr. Thiessen, Jeff Green, Bill Walker from the Environmental Working Group, and a whole bunch of citizens went there to tell the Metropolitan Water District what we thought of their idea of fluoridating the water that they sell us. And that I just finished it this evening. It's going to play on. It's for public access. I'm going to burn a DVD, and it'll be up there in your hands very shortly. I have another one that I'm working on. It's called Poisoned Horses, and it's down to the last. I think I got about 8 more minutes to go, and that's Kathy Justice in Pagosa Springs, Colorado. She lost 10 animals, 6 dogs, 4 horses. And that the interesting thing is that, you know, here you go to the Metropolitan Water District, says there's no evidence exists that fluoridated water at the level prescribed for human consumption is harmful to animals or pets. That's ridiculous. What happens to the dog if he gets too much fluoride is his back legs don't work. Have you seen these dogs around with the little wheelchairs? You know, the veterinarians are putting them down all the time. Is it that's what fluoride causes in humans? It's what causes in animals. It poisons their lower lumbar spine. Why? We don't know. It just accumulates right there, and then they end up with the paralysis of their back legs. And that's what we saw in China, is these people were bent over double, and they couldn't move their legs because they were poisoned with fluoride. It happens in animals, happens in horses, happens in dogs, and that especially if your dog food has ground bone meal, because that's where the fluoride accumulates in your body. When you take in 2 molecules of fluoride, the day you die, one of them's still stuck in your bones. And that's what happens, is your body has no use for fluoride. It'll kill you if it goes up in the bloodstream, so your body immediately finds some place to park it, which is the bone. When the bone fills up, it starts making abnormal bone, and that's where you get your bone spurs, and you get your arthritis, and you get you could take a hand on somebody's long bone and run your hand down, and it feels like it's sandpaper on somebody that's poisoned with fluoride. Well, you think that bone feels good when you walk? No, it hurts all the time. And that's exactly what we're doing to America, poisoning the point where they get these funny-looking bones. There's a lady in Kansas City developed skeletal fluorosis. She went to the doctor and said, oh, my back hurts. And they, oh, well, you know, here, take this Celebrex and come back.
Hold on, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, Dave, go ahead and finish that story.
Come back in 2 years, and she came back in 2 years, said it still hurts. And he took another x-ray, and he noticed how white her lower lumbar spine. The guy, I give my hats off to him, because he recognized that as skeletal fluorosis. And you know what her favorite beverage was?
Tea.
Lipton iced tea.
Right. And, of course, it's got a very high level of fluoride in it. Well, first of all, I want Dr. Kennedy to give us his website and how people can get in touch with him and get his information. We do carry his book on taking care of the teeth What's the title of the book?
It's How to Save Your Teeth.
We carry that book. We think it's important. We carry a lot of his DVDs, but get your information out there, David.
Well, I'm building a new website, and I think you can contact me through the website if the guy has put my email up on there. It's basically SW4SC, and that stands for Safe Water for Southern California, .org. And that you mentioned you had trouble finding the video of poisoned babies. Well, go to that website. It's right on the website. You can click it. It'll take you right to YouTube.
All right, fine. And so then, of course, we have Mike calling in Santa Cruz. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, my producer says we want your website one more time, David.
Okay, it's SW4SC.
That's
Safe Water for Southern California is what it stands for, and it's .org, O-R-G.
All right, fine. Well, hi, Mike. How you doing? No, let's see. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Yeah, I wonder if Dr. Kennedy could elaborate on his comment regarding the effects of fluoride on the pineal gland.
I think that's a very important point, because, David, would you mind discussing the effect of fluoride on the pineal gland and why that is so important, especially in young girls?
the pineal gland is what controls the onset of puberty, and it's actually one of the only endocrine gland that sits outside the blood-brain barrier, and that it basically, when you tap your finger on your teeth, you're tapping on calcium hydroxyapatite. What Jennifer Luke showed was that if she took gerbils and gave them fluoride in about the same dose that you're giving children on a baby bottle, that she calcified that pineal gland and caused it to fill up with calcium hydroxyapatite. Only two places in the body I know that enamel forms, and one's on your teeth and the other's in the pineal gland. The pineal gland then stops making melatonin, which is a hormone that makes you keeps you from the onset of puberty. When it gets depressed, all of a sudden the girls begin to menstruate and the boys go through puberty. That this is a trigger that's inside the human body, that if this child is exposed to high levels of fluoride, or like one part per million in the water, during their development stage, that God just moves the whole calendar up about 3 to 5 years to make sure that they have a chance to reproduce, because they're not going to live very long.
And of course, the thing is that this is well known. This was demonstrated in the original Newberg-Kingston study. They knew this.
Exactly. And Harold Hodge, the same guy that was sending in the people to the toxic plant, noticed that. It actually was noted, and they thought nothing of it. It was a 9-month decline in just... In just 10 years, it was a 9-month decline in the onset of puberty, when the only source of fluoride at that time, that was 1955, there was no fluoridated toothpaste, there was no fluoride in Battle Creek, Michigan, there was no fluoride in all your foods. In 10 years, they had a 9-month decline in the onset of puberty in the kids in a fluoridated Newberg. And that now has gone down to the point where sometimes kids in their 8, 9 years old, my wife didn't have her first period until she was 17. Her mother was 18. And that's more or less normal. And so now what we're doing is we're poisoning the little girls, and now they have, you know, they're going through puberty when they're 10. Well, you can't get pregnant if you haven't gone through puberty. And that's why we have teen pregnancy, is that they couldn't get pregnant if they weren't poisoned, if you will.
So incredible for people to understand that we hear a lot about this, you know, the premature onset of puberty, and everybody says, gee, we can't figure out why it's happening. They know why it's happening. They know back at the CDC, because they're really pretty smart people there, and the program is playing out just exactly as they want it to. Go ahead, Mike.
I wonder if the doctor has this written up anywhere.
The study I'm referring to is by Jennifer Luke, L-U-K-E, and it was 1994. So if you type in Jennifer Luke and 1994 in Google, you'll come across her study, if you like. Okay. Or the other one was the Kingston-Newberg. If you type in Kingston-Newberg, you'll find that study. And it's in the scientific literature. I think Jennifer Luke even referred to the Kingston-Newberg study in her article.
And actually, of course, it's mentioned in the book, The Fluoride Deception, as well. And not only that, but it's mentioned that there was twice as much heart disease in Kingston as in Newberg, but nobody paid much attention to that.
Yeah. One last thing about this, and this is a little far out, but I think it's important in the esoteric realm, that the pineal is related to the third eye and related to a person's ability to be influenced by the demonic realms. It's the top of the kundalini endocrine system. It's what they're all striving for. I'm always curious, whenever it comes to things that are being done to us that affect our pineal, I wonder if they're doing this in a way that it makes us more vulnerable to the demonic realm. I don't know which way this one goes, but I just want to put the thought out there for those who are interested.
Okay, good thinking. Thanks very much,
okay.
Mike. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question for Dr. David Kennedy. And if you think that this is just too far out, this could not be true. I refuse to believe this. Well, believe me, it took me a long time before I had done this study and was firmly convinced it's going to happen. I think that the DVDs that that David took when he was in China. What's the name of that DVD? Because we do carry it.
Let the Truth Be Told.
Let the Truth Be Told. And of course, he's got several DVDs, and a lot of them are interviews with people like Dr. Harvey Lambach, who is up there at the University of Toronto, who's in charge of the preventive dentistry there. And of course, he's not allowed to talk. He's been threatened. When you understand, of course, how important this issue is, you could understand why they would threaten people. They do not dare to let the American people realize that other than Sydney in southern Ireland, and there may be one or two little counties in Great Britain, no place in Europe fluoridates the water. Why? Are we so much smarter than they are? Or are the leaders of our country more intent upon harming the American people and the people in Europe, their leaders, want to preserve their people?
You left one out. There's one in Spain. There's one test city in Spain that I'm aware of. And there's a natural fluoride city in Italy. And the name of the city is Blacktooth, Diente Negro. You think maybe it makes their teeth look kind of funny and black?
I don't know. Let's go to Joe, who's calling from Michigan. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I do have a couple questions, actually.
First of all, where are you calling from?
From Michigan.
Are we calling from Flint, around Flint?
Yeah, around Flint, 600 AM.
All right, great. That's a great station for us. Sure, go ahead. Get your questions up.
First question is, I've used a lot of that, like fluoride rinse in the past. And, you know, you let it sit in your mouth and you rinse it out. But, you know, a lot of times there's like a foam in your mouth that kind of builds up after you use it because you don't really rinse all of it out. Well, actually, the fluoride, a lot of times you're not supposed to rinse your mouth for 30 minutes, and so you spit the stuff out, but the fluoride kind of gets foamy in your mouth, and I'm just wondering.
Are you talking about fluoride toothpaste or what?
No, there's like a fluoride rinse that you can use to.
Let me ask you, is it one you buy over the counter in a drugstore, or is it one a doctor has prescribed for you?
You get it at the regular store.
Okay, one of the regular stores. There are enormous levels of fluoride in those rinses. I'm absolutely certain if you did it on a regular basis, you're going to increase your risk of oral cancer. If you check with the American Cancer Society, they'll tell you that rinsing with an alcohol-based mouthwash will increase your oral cancer. The only mouthwashes that I recommend are salt water. And that's the one that won't increase. And you can make the mouth rinse up with either baking soda or salt or light salt, which is potassium chloride. Those are the only ones I recommend. The fluoride mouth rinse is not going to help you. It's going to increase your risk of oral cancer, in my opinion. And so it's just not the way to stop tooth decay. And here's the problem: tooth decay is a bug, and that rinsing your mouth with the hazardous waste material doesn't kill the bug. That fluoride is not particularly antibacterial. It inhibits the ability of the bug to survive. It can't breathe, but it does the same thing to your cells, so that the cells in your body then don't make the energy that they're supposed to either. That stuff like povidone iodine can be used in a dental office setting. They can kill the germs that are causing the tooth decay and really knock down the amount of tooth decay. You can kill the germs with salt. I mean, it's like I asked a little kid the other day, why don't pickles rot? And he kind of scratched his head, and he didn't know. And I said, well, you know, bacteria can't grow in pickle juice. And right. So you could squirt pickle juice around your teeth if you wanted to.
Right.
But you just need to kill bugs. It's all about killing bugs.
Okay, so it's salt and baking soda, you said?
Salt and baking soda. It's in my book, How to Save Your Teeth. You can make up your own. People say, how much? And I say, how much? I don't care how much. You know, some of this and some of that. It's just like grandma cooked.
Okay, then the other question I have is, if I'm one of those people who... I brush my teeth a lot, and I've been doing it for years, and so when I go to the dentist, I always get cavities, and it's just like, I can't figure it out. It's one of those, like, things that seems impossible. What do I have to do?
Well, that's the two things, and I was really profoundly affected when I was first in practice, right at the end of the Vietnam War. A young man came into my practice who just got out of the Hanoi Hilton. He said he was on top of the world, riding in the back seat of an A-6 Intruder, and got shot out of the sky. And the pilot died, and he got captured, and it was beat on every day for 7 years. And that I had his X-rays, the Air Force X-rays that had taken when he was inducted in the Air Force. He had cavities on all of his back molars, huge ones. And that when he got out of the Hanoi Hilton, that those teeth were all broken off at the gum line. But I tested them; they were all alive. That rotted part of the tooth had turned hard as a rock, And that, you know, I ended up putting, the VA paid me to put crowns on all his teeth. I got him his benefit because the VA would put you back together. And so they put him back together and did a wonderful job. But when I went to drill on that old hard tooth, it wasn't rotted at all. It was hard as a rock of Gibraltar. Why? Is it he wasn't able to eat any sugar at all. Tooth decay is your diet. There's no doubt about it. What you put in your mouth is what's rotting your teeth. And so if you want to quit having rotten teeth, figure out what's got sugar in it and quit put it in your mouth. It's that simple. And I don't mean go eat, get some of these poisons that they call artificial sweetener. I don't recommend that. Just tell yourself, I don't like the taste of sugar. I did it. I had 13 cavities when I started dental school. Learned what caused tooth decay. And I said, you know, I don't want any of that. So I just quit eating sugar. So people bring sugar by. I said, no, thank you. And don't eat sugar. And you don't get
sugar.
Cavities.
For example, in fruits, is that going to also? Because I eat a lot of fruit.
Dried fruit will. Fresh fruit, probably not. Is it the dried sticky fruit, like raisins? They're half the problem. Fruit juice. If you take an orange and you turn it into juice, that's more sugar than, you know, the Carter's got little liver pills. But, you know, if you eat the orange, they eat the whole thing, no, that's not going to hurt you. But if you take stuff and you change from how it's made in its original form into something else, like dried, dehydrated, it turns them into sticky gooey. And so this little piece of fruit will stick on your tooth all day.
Right.
So you don't want that. You know, but you can eat the apple. You just can't eat the dried apple.
Right.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Joe?
No, thanks. That was great.
Okay, we do carry the book, of course, How to Save Your Teeth by Dr. David Kennedy. It's just a little book, but it's probably well worthwhile, especially for you.
Yeah.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and this is such a vitally important issue. I mean, they're poisoning us with mercury fillings. They're poisoning us with mercury that they're putting into vaccinations. And do not for 1 minute believe that they've taken the mercury out of childhood vaccines. They've taken them out of, they put the mercury in the vaccine, vaccines that they give to children, specifically the influenza shot. And one reason they're so anxious to get everybody to get their influenza shot, but it doesn't do any good. Is to, of course, because they know it'll increase the incidence of Alzheimer's disease in the elderly about 1,000% if you take your shot. You certainly need 3 or 4 times over a 5-year period between 60 and 65. And anybody who wants to see the material put out by Dr. Pudenberg, who's the dean of vaccinologists, in other words, the father of vaccine manufacturers in the United States, and he's in his 80s now. But there's no question there's a relationship between the mercury in the influenza shot and Alzheimer's disease. They know that. But you see, there are too many elderly people around, useless eaters. They're encouraging them to take a vaccine that does no good and that has a great deal of harm. And, of course, then they're poisoning us with aspartame and MSG, and they're poisoning us with genetically modified foods. But fluoride is one of the first things that's so easy. The scientific literature is all out there, isn't it, David?
Yes, it is. You know, people ask me, you know, something. Well, why would the American Dental Association promote this? And I have my own theory. And I think what it is, I think it's a fake preventive dentistry program. They want to look good. And so they go out and, you know, they get tons and tons of money from corporate America, because they get corporate America. Almost every major industry in the United States uses fluoride, whether it's Procter & Gamble or whether it's Alcoa aluminum, or whether it's the Cargill or Mosaic, they have fluoride as a waste byproduct, or they use it in their business. So if you can detoxify fluoride in the minds of the American public, it's going to help them. So they end up, you know, funneling their money into the American Dental Association's charitable organization. And they've got a fake, you know, a friendly face on a fake program saying, we're out there working for you, we're trying to work ourselves out of the job, and they're really creating business for themselves. But every single thing they do is to inhibit public access to preventive dentistry or low-cost dental care, or even having the school. Every school nurse in the United States should be able to apply a sealant. I mean, there's absolutely nothing dangerous at all about applying a sealant to a tooth. It's 100% effective if it's done properly in preventing the most common cavity in children, which is right in that 6-year molar. Every 6-year-old child in the United States should have that molar sealed with not a fluoride-leaking sealant, but just a plain old non-estrogen sealant. and that would be so simple. We could train a whole army of school nurses, and the tooth decay would drop dramatically. Well, tooth decay is going up. It's good for business. So if fluoride was beneficial, how come tooth decay has increased so dramatically over the last decade? And that's because it's a fake program. Fluoride causes tooth decay. It doesn't prevent it. But the dentist wanted to look good. Oh, yeah, we're out there working for you. We're trying to get some hazardous waste in your water supply. So as long as you think they're on your side, working for the good of the public, you'll get more fluoride in your water supply, and they'll get more business in the dental office.
But don't you think that the average dentist is really being used in this? Do you think the average dentist has any idea?
No idea at all. No, and then they're not doing it because they're mean, evil people. They're doing it because they're lied to in their education. How's that happen? Because every dental school in the United States teaches dentists to use fluoride. But in order to get accredited, they have to go to the American Dental Association, because the American Dental Association is the only agency in the United States that accredits dental schools. Well, that's wrong. You don't have trade associations accrediting higher education. It should be the other way around. But, you know, can you imagine the engineers of the world going to a trade association to see if they built the bridge right?
Hold up. We'll be right back. Well, David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think that your listeners should do what I've done. Is it if you really feel like you're an American and you want to protect your country, that you have to put your shoulder to the wheel and go to work on this issue. They can only do that if we sit back and rest complacently and let them do it to us. And that's what I'm saying. You know, people say, oh, Dr. Kennedy, why are you spending so much time and your money and your effort and you fly all over and you keep doing and talking to all these people? Why are you doing that? I do it because I'm an American. I do it because it's my obligation. My ancestors fought in the Revolutionary War. And that if we had just ducked and run, we'd have to fly to Canada, wouldn't we? We fight for what's right, and that's basically what I'm doing right here. As I'm talking with you tonight, I'm talking to you about your country. And if you allow this to continue, then you basically need to look in the mirror and say, am I an American or am I not an American? Am I doing what's right for my country, or am I just ignoring what's right for my country? And you do it at your own peril. Why? Because if you poison the baby, and I know it's poisoning the adults, and Dr. Stanley pointed out it ruins bones all over. But if you poison the baby, the next generation are too stupid to be able to get a good job. They're too stupid to compete in the world market. They're too stupid to be able to tell when they're being lied to. And so that's what the problem is if we allow our next generation to be damaged by the hazardous waste disposal in the water supply and in the baby bottle, everybody on the planet today is saying it's not safe for the baby. Well, you know what? That means they need to turn the switch off, or they need to go buy a reverse osmosis system or a bottled water for all the families with babies, because if they're putting something in the water that's not safe for the baby to drink, they should stop putting something in the water. And that's what I'm saying. And the scientists have spoken, and we've done everything we can to get traction in this issue, and what we need is an army of concerned Americans who are willing to stand up to their city councils and their water boards and tell them the truth. You know, if it's not safe for the baby, I don't think you should be allowed to put that in our water. And that's exactly what we're saying. And the Safe Water for Southern California is a website where you can get the information. You can watch the poison babies, and the lady speaking there is Kathy Thiessen. She sat on the National Academy of Science panel for 3.5 years. They voted unanimously that the EPA public health goal was not protective. It's called a maximum contaminant level. American Dental Association says, oh, you can have 8 parts per million. We'll just set it at 4. Well, they said 4 is harming everybody. It poisons the thyroid. It poisons the pineal gland. It destroys the health of people. And so it's not a public health goal. It's not a safe level. And so the safe level for fluoride is about the same as human breast milk. And if you had a bottled water, it should say 0.05.
Okay, we're out of time, David. God bless. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sydney, if you'd like to get the entire tape, remember that Dr. Kenny and I do talk during the breaks. You can get the entire tape of this program by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You have to understand that they really are poisoning our children. They're poisoning the adults. They're poisoning the elderly. First of all, let me suggest the DVDs we have, The Truth Be Told by David Kennedy. We have about 2 DVDs that Dr. Kennedy has put out. And then we have My Talk, which is called The Hidden Agenda. That's the Hidden Agenda, and it's available on DVD. It's available on video, and there's a syllabus that goes with that. It's important that you have it, the Hidden Agenda. You need to have the information. You need to help us get it out. We carry the book, The Fluoride Deception. That's the Fluoride Deception. And then we carry it, 2 4-tape sets on water fluoridation. And, of course, you can go up on the Internet and look to fluoridealert.org. Be careful. If you go to fluoridealert.net or .com, you'll get the American Dental Association. Why? Because they don't want you to get the truth. It's just that simple. So you go to fluoridealert.org. Dr. Paul Conant's material. We talked about Dr. Roger Masters of Dartmouth and his material. Sydney, on the increase of the lead level, specifically in the black children, if they put the hydrofluosilicic acid in the water, if you can't get it, we'll be glad to send you copies of it. We think it is vitally important that people understand that they've targeted the blacks. They know what they're doing. And behind this are powerful spiritual forces. And Sydney, you begin getting the writings of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and certainly Margaret Sanger and Alice Bailey, they all hated the blacks. These are really true racists, the worst kind. And they simply not only hated them, they put their hatred into action and targeted the blacks for elimination. And that's why the AIDS epidemic is spreading so widely in Africa and why, of course, in Botswana today, 46% of the pregnant women, black women, in Botswana are HIV infected. They're all going to die. That's either a tremendously, terribly failed public health policy or a very successful genocidal policy. If you've not yet seen my talk on Nundare Childhood Genocide, if you've not yet seen my talk on planned population reduction, they're both DVDs, we recommend them to you. The video on population control, the 4-tape set on population control, actually, if you have never seen the government document, National Security Study Memorandum 200, that came out in 1974 over the signature of Henry Kissinger, we have that in its entirety. You can get it on the Internet, but you get the entire study from us if you would rather do that. Then, of course, we have the complete testimony of Dr. David MacArthur in 1969. An employee of the Defense Department asking for $10 million to create a new disease for which there'd be no immunological response and a new method of mass killing. And those were his words. Some people think we should not be creating this new disease because it would be the new method of mass killing. And somebody at the government actually sent a copy of his testimony to both myself and Joyce Riley. It came with no identification. But there are people in government who want to get the information out. And then if you want to go to the website of the employees of the Environmental Protection Agency, the website NTEU280.org. That's NTEU280.org, or remember the fluoridealert.org. You'll actually see a lot of the references to this in our syllabus on the Hidden Agenda. And, of course, that is a great syllabus, even if I do say so, because it has Sydney, reprints of the articles from the journal Fluoride that has been, where scientists from all over the world who are concerned about the fact that they're poisoning the American people have submitted articles. And yet, of course, everything is done to suppress the information there, and you'll actually get the information directly off their website, which we reprint with their permission. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because America is under attack today.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.